You're listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense with your host, Doug Thorpe. Here's Doug.
Well, greetings, everyone. This is Doug Thorpe, and you're listening to another episode of Leadership Powered by Common Sense. Today, we're going to dive into a world of helping you be a better leader with a new kind of empathy and probably a whole lot of other things we're going to get into as well. I've got a feeling. My guest is Erin Deal. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Doug. I'm so excited to be here. I hope I have common sense. I'm hopeful that shows up today. We'll see.
Well, good. Well, it is a pleasure to be here. Tell us a little bit about you have just released a new book, and that's exciting. I know if for any of you out there that have done that journey or thought about it, it is truly a labor of love, right, Erin?
Oh my gosh. Yes, it is. It's a lot of laboring. And then it's a lot of love when it's done. But now it's the marketing and the getting it out there and then the vulnerability of having people read it that I'm dealing with. But yeah, it's a labor of love and it's happening very soon.
So let's use that. Let's kind of as our jumping off point here. What is the title of the book and what is the focus of it?
Yeah, it is called I See You, A Leader's Guide to Energizing Their Team Through Radical Empathy. And it is a book rooted in self-love. It's all about giving to yourself. If you are a busy, stressed, burned out leader, get this book in your hand. I use improv comedy as the way that I teach the world. And so it's rooted in some of the principles of improv. I use my own leadership journey to give you tangible tips to help you overcome burnout and love yourself more. And when you can do that, you can be a selfless leader and have radical empathy for those that you're serving and leading. And when you are a selfless leader, and I use case studies from my own leadership journey and my own journey of being led by a wonderful leader to share this experience, you can attract and you can retain the top talent. You can attract the community you want. You can attract the people in your life you want. Let's say it's not necessarily a team that you're looking for, but you're looking for an organization. When you have these components set up in your life, it will set you up for success beyond your wildest dreams. And I was guided to write the book. That's a story within itself, Doug. It's a whole healing journey that I had to go through, but I was truly guided to write the book. And when you say labor of love, a lot of people who write books say it's really hard, it's arduous, it takes a lot of time, there's writer's block. And I have to tell you, this book flowed out of me in a way that I know it's meant to be here and be here now, because I experienced everything in the book itself that I'm helping people learn to do, and it changed my life. So I know if it could help me, it could help others.
That's great. Well, as so often does happen, those books do get inspired by very personal experiences and learning and healing that comes. And so I'm glad you got there. And I think this is such an important topic because, I mean, you packed a lot in there, what you said, and we're probably going to have to break it down into some other chunks. But one of the key things I got out of that is the idea that leaders need to be sensitive to the idea that if you're not whole and full within, you don't have a lot to offer and give to your team, and they're the ones that need it. So it is a critical issue and a consideration. And since the whole COVID lockdown and everything, I've certainly done a lot of work with leaders that are worried about resilience for themselves and for their team. Resilience became one of those business buzzwords that mm-hmm. was talked about at all levels. And not to be facetious, it is a real deal. It is a real issue. And it's easy in this world where, on one hand, it feels like we've all sort of lost our boundaries because work at home, you didn't have a clock. You weren't 8 to 5 or 9 to 4 or whatever your deal was. It just felt right to keep working. If you had to go in the middle of the day and do something with the kids, you felt obligated to go make up that time at work, and you were online and doing things. And Even for the entrepreneur that has a brick and mortar presence, there's a, I'm seeing and observing kind of a loss of that boundary of when do I turn it off? When do I go? And ultimately it leads to a kind of burnout.
Yes. Yes. And that is partially what you just said was some of my story. And I knew if I was feeling this way, that so many other leaders were feeling it too. I would love to share the story of how it came to be, if you're open to that, because sure, it leads into sure. what you just said, because, okay, I'm gonna break it down, Doug. I'm gonna get real. The real deal is showing up. Okay. So during this time, the pandemic specifically, I had just had a miracle baby boy. I had years of infertility with my husband. We had been trying for many years, lots of science experiments, if you will. And I just become a new mom. Right when the pandemic hit, not only was I navigating this guide back to work as a new mom, but I also came back to work 3 months before my entire business had to completely pivot on its head. We were a completely in-person business, and we had just finished a program from Goldman Sachs called the 10,000 Small Business Program. I came out of that with an 85-page growth plan. Okay, that was all about expanding in person in different markets. That was completely ripped to shreds. So literally overnight, this is what I call the three P's of my life. I was pivoting and pivoting and pivoting and pivoting. That resilience was such a strong word for me. I was people pleasing. That's the second P. Because I was a new mom, I was giving to not only this new baby boy, but my family. My mom had a stroke during the height of COVID and almost died, was in the hospital, giving to my family, giving to my team, giving to my peers who are small business owners, laying people off, closing their doors, which led to the third P of my period of three Ps, pain. And it was chronic pain. I'm not talking about like emotional pain. It was physical pain. My back felt completely locked. And I sat with this pain for about 2.5 years. And I tried everything to figure out how to make it stop. Doctors could not diagnose it. What I then realized was my body was holding on to the years of stress that I had not processed, that I had just disassociated myself from, that I threw myself into work. And so once I started to uncover those emotions and really listen to those healing whispers that my body was screaming at me to realize and to go through, a new person was born, and that was me. And that was the homecoming to my inner self, my highest self. And it was through that homecoming to me that I got into my own self-care practice. I always meditated, but I went to a new level of meditation. And through a meditation, I received the guidance from a deceased loved one who ultimately had taken their life because of burnout, because they never gave to themselves. And it was through that download, that meditation, that I received the guidance to write this book. And I tell you, I got up every morning, an hour before my family. I got to work, I lit a candle, I had a coffee, and I sat down at my computer. And through this sort of healing journey and through this guidance of a higher being, I wrote this book, and it came out in 5 months. And here we are, a year later, it's being published. And I know that the story can help so many.
Yeah, I hit the mute button there. Yeah. We'll edit that out. We can fix that. Great to hear, and thank you for sharing that. It's such a meaningful experience, and the one thing I guess that strikes me about all that is that, and I hope and pray for those who are listening that might be on that path, don't hit the wall.
Yeah.
I think that if we're helping you with anything, today's the day. Take a detour, take a stop, find a new way, go a different direction, and begin that healing process before you hit that wall. And the reality is we are incredible creations, and when we have stress and pressure in some part of our life, our bodies do react to it. There's tons of medical science about that. And you know, the ones people know about are fatigue and depression and things like that, but muscle cramps, joint stress, all of those things that manifest as well, that become mysterious ailments that nobody can seem to put a finger on. I'm betting that it goes back to the lifestyle you've created for yourself, and lifestyle of emotional upheaval and emotional baggage and burden that you're not allowing to process in a healthier way.
Yeah.
You know, we all suffer trials and troubles in our lives, and nobody's immune from it. But the challenge, certainly from a leadership standpoint, is exactly that. How do you process it? And how do you create the ability to move from one to the next without assuming and taking on and holding on to the burden of whatever the challenge was?
Yeah, totally. And I agree. Don't hit that wall. I remember there was a point for me in 2020, I was on my knees and I literally looked up at the sky and I said, I can't take anymore. Please stop. And it was the hardest period of my life, as I know so many people have gone through. I have a methodology I'd love to share that helped me get through it, if you're open to that, because sure. A lot of people ask me, well, how did you get through that? And there were so many healing modalities, but I boiled it down to something. And this just, I had a problem and it happened last week, literally on Friday. And I said, okay, Erin, take your own advice. It's called Move On. This is literally an acronym that I can just easily call into my brain, or you can easily call into your brain, and it helps guide you out of that moment. So the first part of that, the M, is marinate. And that is sit with the feelings. It's not a steak. Marination doesn't happen overnight. You got to sit in it. You got to feel it. You got to journal. You got to get, if you want to go to therapy, go to therapy, but you got to feel it. You got to sit with it. And then once you've sat with it, the O and Move On is own it. Take responsibility for your part and forgive yourself for your part. That's huge. The V is verify the lessons learned. So what are the 2 to 3 things you're going to take from this experience that you're feeling? The E is evaluate your next step. So what's your action plan? What's your 2 to 3 things? The O is one of my favorites. It's the So you're sitting in it again, but you're sitting in what you've processed. Okay, so it's not sitting with the thing that happened, it's sitting in the process of the things that you're evaluating. And then the end is the next failure, because there's going to be another thing in your life that feels like a failure or feels like something that you have to bounce back from. And if you can remember that, if you can use that when something comes up that is harmful to you, you will not hit the wall. You will actually bounce back because you've allowed yourself to process. And what happened to me was I never processed anything. I just threw myself into work, or yeah. I would have, you know, a glass of wine after work, so I couldn't feel it. And that experience really guided me to that acronym. It guided me to the book, and it reminded me that our bodies and our mind are so attached. So we have to allow ourselves to process what we're going through so that the words that we say affect our actions. And without processing any of these things, we can't give to other people. We can't show up as the leaders, the parents, the community builders that we want to be.
Yeah. You know, it, I love that acronym. It touches on so many areas. And One thought I had as you were describing that, you know, a lot of people get stuck on that first letter M. You know, they're marinating, and there's a kind of a self-fulfilling, for some, the mindset becomes, I deserve this, I should be here, you know, karma's coming at me, and, you know, I'm doing my penance, I, you know, whatever. And obviously those are all very negative and horrible limiting beliefs to wrestle with. But the reality is a lot of people get stuck right there.
Yeah.
They think about marinating and they go, yeah, I need to stay here.
Yeah.
And they don't do the rest of the work. But I really like that idea of going through that process. And your verify struck me as well, because that's so important to try to learn from every experience, take away something.
Yes.
You know, whether it's how could I have done it differently? What should I have done? Was the way I was thinking really the right way? Does that represent some kind of trigger for me that I need to avoid in the future when I feel it coming? You know, there's so many questions that can be asked at that moment of doing that verification step.
1,000%. And, you know, again, I used this methodology last week. We had a failure, right? And it was something it stopped me in my tracks. And I literally went through this process in my own brain. And as I went through the verify the lessons learned, I realized, oh my gosh, like, of course we should have been doing this the entire time. And it identified a hole in a process in our business that we should have corrected a while ago. And being able to look at mistakes as gifts is actually one of the biggest rules of improv comedy. We say on stage, there are no mistakes, only gifts. And what that means is if something happens on stage that is a mistake, we don't just allow it to be the elephant in the room because the audience knows something happened, right? We have to address it. We have to make it a part of the scene. So for example, if I'm talking to you and I spill water all over my keyboard here and I say, oh crap, Doug. And then I just don't really address what happened. Your listeners are probably like, what is she talking about? I'm like, oh crap. I just spilled water all over my keyboard here, but craps is my favorite game to play in Vegas. And then Doug, we might go on a tangent about Vegas and planning a Vegas trip, but it allows the failure or the thing that you have to bounce back from, that resilience muscle that you're trying to hone, the more you do that and allow it to become a part of the scene of your life, the more you're actually realizing the lessons that you're here to learn and the more you're able to teach that to the people you lead.
Well, let's shift a little bit and talk about the people we lead. And I really want to dig into the empathy part of your book story and your other teaching. There's been a lot written of late in leadership development circles about becoming a more empathetic leader. And I promise you, and I know it's probably a function of my own age, but I know plenty of leaders that are given a book or a story or a message about that, and they just roll their eyes and go, "Oh, here we go again." You know, where do you start with the definition of what it means to be an empathetic leader?
So for me, it's not just putting on somebody's shoes and thinking about them. It's putting on their Nike Dunks, walking around for a day, getting a blister, then being able to look at that person and say, I see you. It's really understanding the human being, not the human doing the work. Empathy comes from a real understanding of self. We have to understand ourself first and then be able to put ourself aside and look at the person that is needing our help, needing our guidance, needing our leadership. And looking beyond just the communication, but the entire being and what is they may be going through outside of work. Because I think what actually did us wonders in 2020 was we would show up to work before 2020 with this hypothetical mask. It's not the KN95s, it's this hypothetical mask. And what actually happened, I think, while we were working from home is people weren't seeing the person in the glass conference room with the giant computer screen and business suit. They were seeing the human at home with their family photos, their dogs next to them, sitting in their sweatpants, working at the computer. And it humanized things. We gave each other a little bit more grace, I think, after that period of time. And so when I talk about empathy, it's not I know Kim Scott, I don't know if you know the book Radical Candor, but Kim Scott is a friend of mine. She's been on my show a few times, and she has this idea of ruinous empathy. It's not overly bending over backwards for a human being, but it's seeing them, seeing all of their facets, being able to look at them beyond just the communication they're giving you right now, but seeing them as the human being for who they are, what they do, and what they bring to the table, and really trying to humanize the work experience versus make it transactional.
Yeah. Yeah, you're so right about that humanizing element of the COVID lockdown experience, and that very thing of people having to revert to their cobbled together workspace at home. And it was interesting to watch the evolution of that in and of itself for people.
Yeah.
We all got good at figuring out how to build a green screen and run some backdrops and things like that. But more importantly, it did that particular boundary. And boy, do I know the story of the mask. We could do a whole episode on that in my own career journey. And but mine, interesting, was went a whole nother direction. But you're right. I think the behavioral things that people maybe evolved into with being able to use their commute time to put on their business presence and then show up one way. But then as they rode back home, you know, you peel all that off and you get to be yourself again. But even that dynamic in and of itself, those that had to do that in some kind of extreme, I think created fatigue and burnout. It was just mind numbing to have to do that if you ever felt compelled to be one of those kind of people. But fast forward to today with leaders that are thinking about how to get more from their team. I think it's a, what would I call it? It's a buyer's market. I think employees are demanding it.
Yeah.
From their leaders.
Yes. Yes. And I think the leaders that want people to stay and want people to thrive and grow see personal and professional development as a must. They see the human being as the person who is there that they can guide and they can give gifts of communication to, but they don't necessarily have to take from them. I have in the book, and this is a whole part two, is all about selfless leadership. I had a leader in my life in my early career who I called Chad, okay? And Chad was climbing that corporate ladder, okay? Would do anything to step over anybody to get to that next level and would take their team with him on that journey. So it wasn't about the human being at all. It was about the human doing the work and how quickly can you do the work so I can get to this next level. When I changed careers, I found my selfless leader. Her name is Jennifer D'Angelo, and she is in the book. I worked for her for 5 years in business development at a recruiting firm, which is something I never thought I would do. She made me stay at that job because of her leadership. And she was the person who pushed me to create Improve It. She was the person who introduced me to my first client, which, by the way, was United Airlines. And she not only saw me for me, the human, she saw me for my flaws. She saw me for my strengths. And she played on my strengths to make me love my job and love what I do. And I was so honored to have, she had to obviously read the book to give me permission to use her name. I was so honored when she said yes, that I could, but also I was so happy that I could give her that reflection point so she could see how amazing of a leader she is. That to me was the most wonderful thing about this book, was being able to not only share with people how they could see themselves and love themselves more, but showing the people in my life how much I see them and how much their leadership impacted me. And that is selfless leadership. She didn't care about her own, obviously she wanted to grow in her career, but she cared more about the people she was leading and then leading herself And she still had so much self-love and self-care that she gave to herself and her family every day. But there was so much love in her own heart that she was able to give that freely to myself and team. And it was a beautiful thing to witness. And because of her leadership, I am now a different leader in how I've built my business.
That's a great story. And it's so important for those who are in a leadership position right now, whether you're in a corporate world or your own business, that ability to have that kind of openness about your mindset on giving. And as you were describing that, I'm thinking about an entrepreneur that I've talked about here on the show. Actually, he's been a guest on my show. He's in a service business. He runs a plumbing company in Denver. But it's a large one and he's doing very well with it. But one of the things he does, he pours into his people up to the point he tells a story that over the last couple of years, he's had five different master plumbers in his team come to him and say, "Hey, I think I want to start another company."
So cool.
And what happens in that trade business usually when somebody does that, the owners say, "You're going to do that. You're dead to me. Turn in your keys, turn in your tools, everything that's mine, I want back. You're done." And it's a very harsh moment, but this guy, he takes a whole different approach. "You want to start a company? Great. Let's arrange some time. I'm going to allow time on my calendar to help you figure it out.
I love it.
We will get you there. If that's what you want to do, we'll get you there." And 1, 2, 3 months down the road, out of those five people, guess how many of them actually ended up leaving and starting their business? One.
Wow.
The other four, after they were shown the whole, open kimono, here's what it takes to run a plumbing company. I'll show you the books. I'll show you the systems. I'll show you the methods. I'll show you everything. They stand back and go, "I don't think that's in my forecast anymore."
They're like, "Okay, I got to do this accounting work. What? Yeah, I need to create." Yeah, I love that though. What an awesome story. Because that human actually gave so much more. He just gave belief to those people. That's, I think, more than actually saying, "Here's the keys to the kingdom," the belief, the confidence that they could do it, and being the willingness to show them shows what an awesome leader he is.
And I asked him the question, well, number one, where'd you get this idea? And was it fueled over time by the multiple opportunities you had to do it? He said, "No, I just believed in it. When the very first guy showed up, I just believed in it, that was the right thing to do." And he said, as I was working with him, he was one of the first that said, "Man, I had no idea it took all this. I'm a master plumber. With all the incentives we have here at work, I can make $240,000 a year. Why would I want all the headaches of running a business?"
Yeah, smart move.
And so he made the choice of the whole family balance and family boundary, but he was equipped and positioned with truth and knowledge to be able to make that decision and be comfortable with it. It eliminated the burning ember that said, "You ought to be on your own. You ought to be on your own." And he said, no, I'm good.
He's like, okay. And that in itself, those four people and the fifth one who actually started their own business, they will always remember that moment of, let me take you under my wing. Let me show you. I always remember when I told Jen about this idea and she goes, "This is brilliant. Let's pitch it let's pilot it," pun intended, "to United Airlines." She literally was the catalyst for my growth and the catalyst for me believing in myself. She taught me how to network. She taught me how to build business relationships. She taught me how to trust myself in a business relationship. There was so much that she taught me just by believing in me that I'll never forget.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Aaron, unfortunately, we're about up on time here, so we need to bring this thing to a close. And I really thank you so much for sitting in. Tell everybody the best way to get a hold of you.
Yes, you can go. I'd say the easiest thing to do is go to itsaarondeal.com. All the social, the book, all the things, the podcast, it's all right there. And I'm here to answer any questions, to share leadership stories, to be a resource. And that is truly what we're here to do, is be a resource for leaders, to help them be the best leaders that they can be, so they can sit here and tell their own success story about their leadership journey.
That's awesome. Well, thank you again for doing that. And as always, folks, we're going to have those links in the show notes. So please hop down, check out Aaron's work, and look for her new book. Tell me the title again.
I See You, A Leader's Guide to Energizing Your Team Through Radical Empathy. You can just say I see you, but I always give the subtitle there.
Sure, sure. Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, look forward to checking that out. And with that, folks, we're going to wrap up. I do want to remind you, as always, we have a video version of this show over on YouTube, channel by the same name. If you're listening right now on your favorite streaming service, hop over to YouTube, check us out, look at the archives and see what we got going on. And please, as always, leave us a comment, give me some feedback. Let me know about a topic you're interested in and pursuing further. For now, we're going to say goodbye. Go out there, make it an awesome and great day.
You've been listening to Leadership Powered by Common Sense, hosted by Doug Thorpe. If you would like to know more about the coaching and advisory services he provides, visit DougThorpe.com.